talking about the history of geology and the past faith and science informing the present. So I'll let him go.
Thank you. A lot of times when you see something that's supposed to be telling about the history of geology, it identifies somebody, whether Darwin, Lyell, Smith, Hutton, somebody like that, as having rejected a prevailing strict biblical literalism, young earth position based on geologic data, and instead going for an old earth. Conversely, anybody who has reference to a significant flood or other catastrophes is often identified as having a young earth flood geology type position, and depending on who's making the claim, this means that the person is either a hero or a villain. But none of this is actually true. The actual history of geologic understanding of the history of the earth develops quite gradually, and there are many different ideas that develop, and some of them go somewhere and some of them don't so much, starting back in the 1500s. Major questions involved. One, figuring out just what's the pattern of history. I'm not quite sure what this thing is also, is another question. And in understanding history, do we take more of an empirical approach, just go out and see what the evidence is, or philosophically, do we think we know how things ought to happen and use that to guide our ideas of history? Focusing in on geology, how do these layers we see out there form? Can we match up these layers, put them in order? And more detailed, can we reconstruct the past from what we can see today in geology? Oops, this isn't actually. So two key ideas about the pattern of history that were popular. One was the idea of history being rather cyclic and infinite, just keeps repeating over and over. And this is fairly deterministic. If you're paying attention last time, you know what's going to happen next time, if things keep going in cycles. This was an idea popular in some of the classic Greek thought and also quite popular with Enlightenment deism. Excuse me. In contrast to that, you have a lot of Christian sources thinking of history as being linear, starting somewhere, going somewhere, not repeating circles. Finite, you've got a beginning and end. And also it's contingent. We can't just, okay, here's how I think things should be. Well, that's nice, but it's probably not how they really are. You have to actually go out, look at the evidence, and figure out what the evidence points to. After all, if God's thoughts are not our thoughts, then our thoughts about how things ought to be probably aren't totally correct. We have to see how he really did things. So, if we are trying to reconstruct the history of the earth based on the evidence and not on our philosophies, what evidence is there? We can find things in rocks. Here's a rock, for example, that has another rock inside it. Does this tell us something about how the rock formed? Or could things grow in rocks somehow? Can we put layers in order in advance? A couple of popular ideas drawing on Platonic and Aristotelian philosophy was that there were various sorts of forces out there that would cause similar patterns to occur in many contexts. And so stuff could kind of form within a rock, and seeing something in a rock that doesn't tell us about how the rock formed. In contrast, in the mid-1600s, what we would today think of more natural explanations became popular. A key figure here was Steno. And one thing he did was note that the pattern of growth of a crystal that does sometimes form a rock is different from how, say, a shell or a bone or other biological thing forms. And when you look at what we today call fossils, they grew like living things. So that's actual old coral in the rock, not some coral-like thing that somehow formed within the rock. Steno also took some common sense reasoning and began putting geologic layers in order. Another big question in this time frame is how do fossils get where we find them? Especially, a lot of the common fossils are ocean fossils. We saw some ocean deposits with the geology trip yesterday. We're not near the ocean. What are those doing here? 1600s up through all the way into mid-1700s, the two best explanations available were either this was due to Noah's flood or that changes in geography had happened, but both of these are problematic. On the one hand, Noah's flood in the Bible got less than a year. That's not long enough for many things to grow their full life cycle way up on land somewhere. And the Bible doesn't describe the flood as being so violent as washing stuff up out of the ocean up onto land vast distances. So that's not matching too well. Also, both popular air-stealing philosophy and other considerations made a lot of people think that actually a regional rather than global flood was more plausible. But just how much could geography change? Seems pretty drastic to have the ocean all the way up here in the middle of Colorado. That's not what they're thinking about. They're thinking about Europe, but still, same idea, ocean in the middle of Switzerland's similar issue. As people looked more at rocks, another question came up is, how do these layers form? And two big schools developed in the 1700s, Neptunism versus Vulcanism. And as the name suggests, Neptunism argued that these rock layers largely form chemically out of water. Vulcanism, on the other hand, argued for rock layers forming out of melted rock that cools. In Neptunism, the basic idea was that the Earth was originally covered by some primordial ocean, chemically very different from what we have today. And so different rocks formed out of that. And then that ocean changed chemically, and we get different rocks, and so on, and eventually that ocean starts to recede, exposing the land that we have today. That's not Noah's flood. Yes, it's flooding, but we start flooded, and it's very slow. Now, both of these ideas, they're onto something. There are rocks that form chemically out of water. There are rocks that form by cooling from molten, and there are rocks that form other ways, too. So, all either one or the other was wrong. As people got looking more at geology, they noticed that there are lots and lots of layers out there. Many of these could be recognized all across Europe and eventually started to look elsewhere and find them too. Each of these layers takes some amount of time to form. And most of these layers look like sand and mud stuck together, just like the plain old sand and mud you'd find piling up in a lake or at a beach or places like that. So to make each of these layers under the slow everyday processes we see takes a long time. How long is long? Mid-1700s, who knows, but it's long. And in these layers, we don't find traces of humans. So it looks like there's this big chunk of pre-human time out there recorded in geology. And so by the later 1700s, anybody knowledgeable about geology was recognizing that the Earth looks old. This included quite theologically conservative Christians, as well as all sorts of other folks. This wasn't seen as unbiblical, just that, okay, it wasn't so relevant, so the Bible didn't bother mentioning this stuff. Now we can fill in a little extra detail from geology. A figure from this time, late 1700s, was when he was particularly active, James Hutton, Scottish. His ideas were quite typical of what was popular among deist circles of the day. Earth and humans, essentially eternal, slowly going through regular cycles of change. Hutton did do some going out looking at rocks, including the ones you can barely see in the background there. but his ideas were basically deistic philosophy, not really based out of his looking at the rocks. And, okay, old, but infinite is a whole lot more different from 4.5 billion than 6,000 is. Just because it's old does not mean it resembles a modern geologic idea. Hutton also is a volcanist. Actually, the rocks that you can't really see in the background here are some they looked at to show that basalt really is what we today call an igneous rock. Came from a volcano. But, of course, as a volcanist, he didn't think that sedimentary rocks were igneous too. He was right on one thing, but not on all. Actually, much more important in the development of geology, but it was on the wrong side of the English Channel, so English-speaking folks didn't focus on him as much, Georges Cuvier. one of the first things he did geologically was, with some other folks, go out and look at the layers that could be easily found in the vicinity of Paris. And now, even today, you dig a basement in Paris, you might find some pretty shells like this. These layers don't show any particular pattern. Sometimes you're in a marine layer. Sometimes it's fresh water to land. And then here's the ocean again, and it's not a regular alternation. It's not a slow, steady change. You have to go out and look at these layers of sand and clay and so forth to find out what was going on in the geologic past. You have to look at the evidence. Speculation, you couldn't figure this out. Other big thing, what Cuvier is much more famous for, instead of going out and looking at the layers, was sitting around the museum while everybody sent him their strange fossil bones, and he figured out what they were. Very expert in anatomy, and he was the first person to definitely demonstrate that extinction had happened before modern humans. First things he tackled were elephants, pretty big, so it's kind of easy to examine the anatomy. And he showed, one, African and Indian elephants are not the same, and two, neither one of them is a mammoth. Cuvier was pretty sure that by 1800, Europeans would have noticed if mammoths were still running around. So he concluded that there really was extinction in the past. Now people have that impression, but are we really sure they're not just living somewhere else in some corner of the world, especially some strange ocean fossil? Well, who knows what's at the bottom of the ocean? Elephants are in the bottom of the ocean. So if we really had extinction in the past, this means that we really can use similar fossils as a way to recognize different layers. Very important to putting geologic events in order. Also, why do things die out? This suggested that there had been occasional drastic events in the past to wipe things out. Meanwhile, back in England, William Smith, fairly humble background, worked on canals and railroads, and in doing so, he saw a lot of rocks and noticed regular patterns in the layers and in the fossils. And based on that, he was able to put together an excellent geologic map of England, very detailed, much bigger area covered than anything before, nice color pattern, all sorts of nice things about it. But Smith was basically into layers. He didn't care much how they formed, how old they were, things like that. He liked mapping layers and figuring out, hey, you might have coal here, or no, you don't have coal here. And also, he wasn't as influential as the more well-to-do and better educated geologists of his day. So Smith, though a great mapmaker, wasn't really making a radical change. You can find, say, Simon Winchester's popular book, The Map That Changed the World, represents Smith as boldly challenging the church and risking jail by claiming that the Earth was old. No. Old Earth, as we saw, was established already well before Smith was active. Smith was slow to publish things, and so a lot of the stuff first came out in a work by a Methodist minister friend of his endorsing Moses' reliability for history. That's not challenging the church if you read through the whole title. Yeah, it takes a while, but still, Winchester should have been able to do that. William Smith actually was slow to recognize that the Earth was old. He wasn't really thinking about that much. He wasn't challenging any establishment by eventually becoming old Earth. So by the time we get to the early 1800s, all the geologists recognize Earth's got a long pre-human history. Ordinary geologic processes that we can see going on today account for most of the things we can see in the geologic record, and there are changes in the dominant species that we see over time. No giant swimming lizards in North Carolina anymore, unlike the tooth here. Almost everybody in the early 1800s recognized that the geologic record suggests that from time to time there are drastic catastrophic events outside what we've documented in recorded history. And there's directional change in the types of fossils we find. You start out with very simple things and gradually add others, and finally humans show up at the very end. This is commonly referred to as catastrophism. Not necessarily the best name, but well, it's what's used. Catastrophists often did regard the biblical account of Noah's flood as a description of the most recent catastrophe. Depending on their views on the Bible, they may have thought a good or garbled version, but it was often thought as referring to that most recent catastrophe. However, not necessarily regarded as global, and these catastrophes were assumed to be of natural, though unknown, causes. In contrast to basically everybody else, Charles Lyell, very important, put together through several editions, major textbook of geology for the 1800s. He very thoroughly, carefully documented what we could observe today happening geologically, and carefully documented the patterns of changes in fossils over time. And all the other geologists really liked that. What they didn't like was the way that he advocated a strict gradual cyclic pattern, kind of a throwback to the Enlightenment folks like Hutton. Lyell was resistant to the idea that past geologic events could be significantly outside the range that we observe today. Okay, yeah, maybe we haven't actually seen the very biggest earthquake, but it shouldn't be much bigger than what we know of. That sort of thing. Lyell also resisted the rather clear evidence from the fossil record that there was directionality in the history of living things. Lyell was a major influence on Charles Darwin, and yep, Darwin ended up being somewhat overly gradualistic on some points. This cartoon actually spoofs Lyell as a prehistoric reptile returned lecturing about fossil humans, showing the cyclic return to an age of reptiles. You can see this strange fossil that the ichthyosaurus lecturing on. On the other hand, Lyell was right that the catastrophists didn't fully appreciate just how much could happen through slow, everyday geologic processes. So again, we've got folks that are kind of right on some things, not off on others. So the reality is, instead of simple black or white hands, we've got a whole lot of possibilities out there. A lot of sources, pretty much what I find for our biology and geologic textbooks, a lot of the popular science history type books out there, some young earth sources, science TV shows. These often give a false dichotomy of anybody back in the past as either modern geology or young earth, no other possible shades there. A lot of times you see additional science faith warfare problems there too. The reality is that both modern geology and modern young earth creationism developed within the 1800s. They're not exactly the same as anything before. You can find various similarities or differences in stuff that was out there before, but it's not identical. Just because somebody happens to mention a more or less old earth or a flood or other things like that, you can't then pigeonhole them into the modern categories. Another important thing, Christians are quite prominent in the development of modern geologic ideas, and the idea of having a regional flood or old earth, not too many folks had problems with it back in the 1700s, 1800s. Usher, we tend to think of his dating as being a classic young earth example. We don't think of Isaac Newton coming up with a slightly younger date. But the work of folks like that was thinking of history as being linear, contingent, and based on the evidence, and going out applying those same principles to the rocks led to modern geology gradually expanding the time scale from what they could come up with the data based just on their recorded human history that folks like Usher were working from. So, thank you. Various helps here. Some funding from my university. The equipping the paleobiologist seminar a couple years back gave some useful discussions. A lot of help with illustrations. And references, want to especially cite the work of Martin Rudwick. I list some of his books here, but probably the best entry would be his most recent, The Earth's Deep History. This gives a good overview of the history of geology, and of course refers back to his other books, which, you know, The Earth's Deep History is more like this, and some of the others are more like that. So if you really get into it, you can go a lot further. There, that's what the cover looks like on that one. Okay, so thank you.
We have time for just a few questions. If anyone has any questions.
I was curious why you stopped where you did. Why did you deal with plate tectonics and Barker?
So. Well, partly, limit how much gets into 20 minutes.
Repeat the question, please.
Why did I stop at that point in the mid-1800s? Partly, well, limited time to the talk, but also that's kind of when we have established major principles of modern geology, kind of getting into, okay, we know the Earth is old, we're figuring out how it works, we're able to put together reconstructions of the past. So we've got that base established to move forward and try to figure out how things work, such as plate tectonics and so forth. Brugwick actually goes into all that. If you're interested, I'd certainly recommend his book on those.
Any other questions? Actually, I have one. You said that young Earth creationism was developed about the same time as modern geology. Was it in response to the development of modern geology? Was there some sort of a relationship?
There was some degree. There were a handful of folks, not very many, but a few, who were not happy with the idea of an old Earth and argued against it. So you have a little bit of that as a reaction developing, and then mid-1800s you get the theological impetus in Seventh-day Adventism of specific founder endorsing a young Earth and things developing there as well.
Okay. All right, let's thank our speaker again.